autumn is spent and winter is just around the corner. That means the holiday season is upon us. Christmas is the preeminent holiday. As the big day approaches, we turn our thoughts to family, friends, and hopefully church. It is, after all, joy to the world. But there is someone listening to us right now for whom the holiday season is exactly the opposite. Instead of joy, the season brings loneliness, sadness, and depression. Can we see past the festivities to see the hurting persons around us? We'll talk about it today on Craving Answers, Craving God. I'm Chuck Rathard with Aaron Miller. Aaron is the senior pastor at Trinity Lutheran Church in Springfield, Illinois. Aaron, it feels a bit unseemly to be throwing cold water on the anticipation of Christmas, but we dare not bury our heads and ignore those who struggle at this time of the year. So what's the best way to thread this challenging needle?
I think if we think of Christmas not as something that's enjoyable for us, like it's not the time for me to be happy. Hang with me here. Let me finish saying what I'm saying here. Don't turn me off. Christmas isn't about me being happy, but it's about us, like every other time of the year, serving and loving others, being aware that Christmas is an extremely difficult time of year for a lot of people. And there's a bunch of different reasons for this. I mean, famously, Christmas is brutal for those who've lost loved ones. Absolutely brutal. They've spent their entire lives. Christmas is frequently the one time of the year when a whole family is together. You know, if kids are spread out everywhere, and this is the only time that mom and dad and kids and grandkids are all in the house at the same time. And then to lose somebody out of that group every year at Christmas, it's a reminder that person is gone. And so just to be aware that Christmas is difficult, and then for a lot of people, Christmas exposes the emptiness of our hopes and dreams, and the expectations that we put on Christmas never get met. That's discouraging. We live in a culture where Christmas is, the joy of Christmas is, it's used to sell product, and so it's always on top of us. Happy, smiling faces, cheerful music, lots of lights. And our lived experience doesn't match up with that for one reason or another. It could be 100 million different reasons. And we're let down. And for us, all of us, to be aware that there are people who aren't experiencing the joy of the season, and to meet their needs, to go and to find out who they are and to lovingly meet their needs. There's this impulse. I think probably every community is like this, is like, we don't want to be sad. We want to be happy. And when somebody's sad, the easiest thing to do is just to kind of leave them alone. Like, don't, it's not intentionally rude. It's, well,
they need their space.
Yeah, that's a great way. That's a great line. You said that like you've said that before. they need their space. Like you hear that all the time. You know, let's just give them their space. And really sometimes it might be our job. I'm rambling on here. I'll stop in a second. It might be our job just to say, this Christmas is going to be no fun, but we are going to be the people. We are going to be with people who are hurting. That's what we're going to do. We're not going to ignore them, and we're just going to be with them. And this is not going to be joyful, but we're going to love them. Sometimes that's the best thing to do.
On a previous Craving Answers, Craving God podcast, we talked about the increasing numbers of people who are struggling with loneliness. For more and more people, these emotions present a year-round difficulty, not just a seasonal difficulty. So how serious is the problem of loneliness?
It's epidemic.
Epidemic.
It's everywhere.
It's a strong word.
Yeah, I just grabbed a book that I've been meaning to read for a long time, and I picked up a copy about a month ago, and it's a book called, it's by a sociologist whose name escapes me. There's a bunch of listeners who will know it and maybe email in. It's called Bowling Alone, and it tracks very thoroughly. It tracks the decline in our society of people being involved in community. Tracks the decline in church attendance. It tracks the decline in voluntary organizations. The title is Bowling Alone. It tracks the decline in bowling leagues. They aren't in community anymore. And there are cultural impulses that all of us in the West grapple with towards individualism. I don't need anybody else. I can do this on my own. And other people actually get in my way because then I have to accommodate them. I can't have supreme power if there are other people within my sphere of power. And so we figured out ways to give each other space. That's the nice way of saying it, the way you put it earlier. And really it's, we've even figured out ways to do this in families, like people living in the same house who live private lives. I mean, they might eat dinner together. They might sleep in the same bed together. They might sit down and watch the same Netflix series together, but there's no connection because to give up, to let somebody else into my sphere means giving power to them. Okay. So now we have more power than we've ever had. In our postmodern world, we've become little gods and goddesses. We are supreme lords of our existence. But the price to pay for that is loneliness. We don't have connection with people anymore. We've given that up because we don't want that. We don't want the bad stuff that I'm putting that in air quotes, the bad stuff that goes with that. So now we're lonely. That's amplified frequently during holidays, that sense that I'm isolated. Because perhaps there's memory of past holidays where there was togetherness, and now we've just got used to not being, to living separate lives, even though we spend time together. It could be the expectation of holidays. I mean, if you watch any junky Hallmark movie or contemporary cartoon about Christmas, it's going to be, Christmas, Johnny, is about being with the ones you love. That's what they're going to say. That's going to be the payout. But we all know, like, being with the ones that we love is not a lot of fun. Like, you know, I mean, oh, that's so special, being with the ones I love. That's actually why I'm depressed. It's because I have to be with these people all the time, and there's no connection. We work at cross purposes. And so Christmas, when we're forced together, and then the blanket of everybody be happy because we're all together now is thrown on top of us, it's smothering. And it's very, very heartbreaking. And that's not even talking about those who wish they were with the ones that they love and they can't be because they've passed away. Oh, I'll give you a good example. I was a woman at my church who leads the grief share ministry, very, very powerful ministry for those who are grieving. And she was telling me this fascinating story before she started the grief share ministry at my church. She had lost her husband. I'm going to mess these details up. So please forgive me, Jolene, when you listen to this, if you do listen to this. And she had gone to be involved at another church, had started something like Grief Share, but it wasn't Grief Share. So she went to this other church. It was a non-denominational church, I think. And she got involved with this ministry, and it was really good. And one of the leaders of the ministry said, hey, we have a ministry for those who are grieving the loss of loved ones. And every year, we do a special session about surviving the holiday season. But there's this ministry on the other side of the church that's for people who've been divorced. And every year they do a get together and a meeting and kind of a little tiny party about surviving the holidays when you've been abandoned by a spouse. Let's get together and put these together. And she said it was the worst event in the history of church events. Because you have one group of people who would give their right leg just to have their spouse back for this holiday season. And then you have another group of people who would tear the right leg off their ex-spouse just for the pleasure. They would consider it to be a Christmas present if they could cause bodily harm to an ex-spouse. And they were together, and they were absolutely opposite purposes. You know?
Critical mass.
Yeah, and so they're both sad for the same reason, right? But it's so completely different. And the way that they grapple with this is different, and the way they're grappling with their grief is different. And so to be aware of that is to be aware of the grief that's so prevalent at the holiday season is key to being sensitive, not just to ourselves as well. Because I'll say one more thing and then I'll be done. I too am always disappointed at Christmas. Every year I'm disappointed. And this has been without fail, probably since I was a kid. It is never as good as I think it's going to be. There's something that tells me, oh, Christmas is magical. And I put up a tree every year with all the lights and we have the family over, and every year it's a letdown. It's every year I'm worn out. I've been drugged through the ringer. And well, my kids will tell you every year on Christmas Day, I say this to my shame, I take a massive nap. And one of my daughters always says, why don't we, Christmas is always so boring. I'm like, I just did three services yesterday and my last service ended at 12:30 in the morning. And I got up this morning and did another service early this morning and I'm just worn out. And for my family, Christmas Day is always a letdown. And that's on me. I've allowed myself to get caught up in the, you got to do stuff. You got to do stuff. You got to do stuff. You got to be busy. You got to be buying. You got to be pressured. And I need to stop and slow down and actually celebrate Christmas with people I love. And I've not found a great way to do that. And maybe this year will be the year, but I fully anticipate being disappointed in myself again.
CACG at stjamesglencarbon.org if you have a suggestion for Pastor Aaron Miller on how not to be so boring on Christmas Day. Let's see if we get a response to that.
Let's see if any of them match up with my daughter's creative ideas.
You were talking about being aware.
Yeah.
And the way you described that story, I could tell that you're aware. You're aware of how exhausted you are. You're aware of how unstimulating you are for the children and your family on Christmas Day. What if I were to say, hey, I sympathize with those who are lonely and sad, but I have to confess, I don't think I know anyone in that predicament. I'm just not seeing it, or I'm just not aware. Is there a way to see it better?
Yeah, so first of all, I'll just say Chuck is not talking for himself. I know he's raising a question that something that a lot of people have, which is, why are we talking about our feelings all the time? You know, why don't we just live our lives? I think just talk to people and ask them. So many people who struggle with mental health issues, with depression or anxiety, and especially around the holidays, it's true, they don't want to talk about it out loud because they don't want to be the downer. And they don't want people to look at them like, oh, so you're showing up here on the happiest time of the year, acting like you're sad. Why don't you just grow up and have fun with the rest of us? They don't want, and it's not necessary that people will think that, but you feel the weight of that. And so being sympathetic, realizing that it's there, realizing that it is almost a universal, it's almost universally true that people are let down by Christmas. Even people who are happy and love Christmas, it's never as magical as they plan on it being. And stopping and saying, wait a minute, how can we love and serve each other? How can we be here for each other? How can I actually be sad with you on Christmas and not run away from it because I just want to give you your space, like that great line you said? And just to be aware of people, part of that is like building long-term relationships with people. I'll just tell you that if somebody is struggling with mental health issues in July, they will be struggling with mental health issues in December. That's just, and if you know that somebody's in that boat, make sure that in December, you're going to them and spending time with them and loving them and being sensitive to them and giving them space and permission not to be holly jolly, but to be kind of maybe quieter if that's the way they are, to be bummed and to say, I'm not leaving you. I'm with you. I feel that way a little bit too myself. And just to be with people. But a lot of it takes just building relationship earlier on in the year. I mean, the other thing too, and we had to have talked about this in previous Christmas episodes, but there's something about Advent that says, wait. That's what Advent's about. God is returning to be king of the world. Wait on him. So a big chunk of Isaiah is about this. Those who wait on the Lord will renew their strength. It means don't just be calm and wait for God. And then every year Advent comes around and waiting is the opposite of what I'm doing. I'm like hard charging.
I'm behind.
Yeah. Like, and I can't wait. I'm scrambling to catch up with whatever it is, planning, shopping. There's so many parties. I know it's good. I know Christmas parties are good. Honestly, though, I don't need to go to 8 of them. My kids' sports teams have a Christmas parties. These are staff Christmas parties. There's church group Christmas parties. There's work Christmas parties. It's just too much. And I find myself frazzled and worn down. And it's not just about me. It's I don't actually invest in anybody else because I'm just trying to keep my nose above water. And if we can find a way to make Advent what Advent was supposed to be, a time of quiet and waiting and just space to like sit and wait on the Lord, I think that would help all of us. Those of us who struggle with mental health, I'm one of them. And those of us who try to love people who struggle with mental health, and I want to be one of them too. I think making Advent what Advent was supposed to be and not, oh, here's your runway for Christmas. Here's the 4 weeks of Christmas prep. And just giving us that time to be quiet and listen to God's voice and maybe sit quiet. I think I said this to my church a few years ago. Why don't you turn off the lights in your living room, put on some nice music, quieter music, but music that you like. It doesn't have to be Christmas music. It might be better if it's not Christmas music. Turn on the Christmas tree lights and just sit in the dark and alternate between talking to God quietly, talking to each other quietly, and just sitting in silence. Why don't we try that this year? I think that would go a long way towards helping with a lot of this stuff.
So as a pastor, I mean, you've spoken eloquently about this challenge. As a pastor, one of the things that may be unique about you and other clergymen is that sooner or later, somebody will make an appointment with you to come to discuss these things with you. Nobody's ever made an appointment with me to talk about their loneliness, but I assume that that happens for pastors. Have you been able to develop a sensitivity so that when, I don't even know what I'm asking here, when you enter the room, oh, pastor's here, and you can see who's here, that you can say, I need to talk to that person?
If I know them, it's not, I don't think it's like a magical, sometimes it's not magical though. It's, you can tell, actually, one of my students.
Could it be a Holy Spirit moment?
Oh, sure. It's never either the Holy Spirit or intuition, I think. It's never natural versus supernatural. And one of my seventh grade students who I've just known this school year in class this week, I want to say it was Wednesday morning. And I said to him, I was like, Nazir, I just leaned down and whispered, are you okay, Nazir? He was real quiet. He was not, he was usually real talkative and bubbly. And he goes, I'm fine. He said it a few times and I didn't press it, but I know that it meant something to him that I noticed that he was quieter than normal and said something to him. I mean, my go-to is like, if I walk into a room of anybody, but this includes Christian people, I assume that 90% of them struggle with loneliness. And part of that is like just my own experience. I'm struggling with loneliness myself in churches. When I came to St. James Lutheran Church, this is my prior church, in 2018, a bunch of people started coming to church and I was blown away. I've mentioned this in sermons back then even, and I still talk about it. People were saying to me, I've gone to church my whole life, but I've never really felt like I've known anybody or they've known me. And the L word came up a lot, lonely came up a lot. And there are people who used to go to the same church and would sit on ends of the same pew and would never have talked to each other before until they came to St. James and realized, oh yeah, we went to church together for years. And we came in, sat down, did our business, church business, went, got communion, heard a sermon, sang some songs, turned around and left. And people are, like I say, loneliness is an epidemic. I just assume everybody's lonely. And the only cure for that is community. You got to be with people and there's no switch. You can't do it overnight. You can't say, let's get together with 10 people and then we'll stop being lonely. It takes a long time investing in just small talk at first And then you get to know people and you get closer and closer. Once you get to that place where you're knowing people and they're knowing you, it's a drug. It's people don't want to be lonely, and we are. So on Christmas, being with people, and if you feel like not being with people, just ignore that and go, you need it more than anybody. And including people, I'll give you an example. I'm not bragging on myself. I have nothing to do with this. So there's five people in my family, and then my sisters, my two sisters, and my mom and dad, and my mother-in-law. That makes, hold on, I got to do some quick math in my head. That makes
a lot of people.
18 of us. 18 of us. We at our house this year will have 32 people for Thanksgiving, because Angela finds people who need a place to be and they don't want to be by themselves, and says, come,
God bless,
be
with Angela. Us.
And that's just what we have to do. We have to proactively pull people into our lives and say, my life is your life. My house is your house. My time is your time. Your emotions will be my emotions. We will laugh together and we will cry together. And let's not let each other live alone. And that's not just a Christmas thing. That's all year long we got to be doing it. And then at Christmas, the payout is you'll be able to tell, and there'll be a ground for people to have a community to be with others when they need it most, when the pressure to be lonely and to be depressed is highest. So that's my advice. Be like Angela.
You know, when you started mentioning that, all of a sudden I started, into my mind come episode after episode of Jesus doing exactly that in the 3 years that he served, in his ministry.
Yes.
An almost endless stream of moments where Jesus did exactly that.
Yeah, lots of meals, right? I mean, like, I'm coming to your house to eat. Nobody else likes you. You're the outcast in this town, Zacchaeus. I'm coming to your house to eat with you. All these parties where he's like, invite everybody here. He's always
eating, especially in the gospel, collectors and sinners.
He's always eating meals and celebrating with all different kinds of people who are outcast and have no one to celebrate with. That's what we should be doing. We should be Christ living through us in the way that we open our home and our table to others. So be a huge, massive part of the holiday. Should be. And I just realized, because our production engineer, Larry O'Leary, pointed this out, I just mentioned Thanksgiving like it's coming up. It is for us in this room right now. This is pre-recorded. It's being released a week, I think, before Christmas. But Thanksgiving is still in my future, although by the time you're listening to this, it's in our past. Go ahead, Chuck. Sorry about that.
I'm pushing forward, except I'm actually going to be pushing backward and drilling down on a point that we've already discussed. After you so eloquently identified us with Jesus as our Savior and the one who gives us some of the best examples of looking after lonely and unprivileged people, what if I were to say, hey, I'm kind of a none-of-my-business person. If I were to poke my nose into other people's business, there's a good chance I could make them feel worse. Best to just leave it alone. What would you say?
You're wrong. That's what I would say.
Okay.
Like, unless you're Adolf Hitler, or you've got like massive body odor or some other.
So far, I think I'm okay.
You're 0 for 2. Or some sort of other like easily repairable problem. That's a defense mechanism, I think. I think it's really related. I keep on mentioning this because it's a great line. It's really related to that, well, I should just give them their space kind of line. There are times when people want space, but people want community. They want relationship. And so my hunch is that that's a postmodern defense mechanism, that I just don't want to get involved, you know. And we got like, I mean, we all do this all the time. Like, you know, you walk into church and there's somebody you don't recognize and you think, I should go introduce myself and find out who they are. And then you think, nah, somebody else will probably talk to them. And they look like they're kind of settling in. I just don't want to irritate them. And there's all kinds of stories on a macro scale of people. There's a famous one. I don't remember her name, but it happened in New York City back in the 60s or 70s of a, and gosh, I wish I could remember her name. It's a very famous case where a woman was murdered, and in kind of two stages, a guy came and assaulted her, left, came back and assaulted her again. And she's screaming for help. And this whole neighborhood heard her. Nobody did anything. Just like, it's none of my business. And this world that we live in now, I mean, the old timers will tell you that, you know, people used to, they used to actually know their neighbors, and they used to have relationships with the people who lived on the farm over or lived on the next block even. And their kids were in and out of each other's houses. And that's just not the case in my neighborhood. You could go for a long period of time and not see any other human being or not have a conversation with one of your neighbors. And we just need to fight back against that. And the whole, it's, well, it's none of my business. That's, you know, what's that line from A Christmas Carol where Ebenezer Scrooge says to Jacob Marley, you know, you were always a good businessman. And he says, the world was my business. Humanity was my business. That's a realization that every Christian has to come to, that there is no none of my business. You are my business and I'm your business. And that's what we were created for. And to begin to live, man, that was terrific. I pulled in like a Christmas Carol reference.
Excellent.
I'm really good at this. Did you notice that?
Yes.
No, that was just pure.
I commend you.
I came to mind because my daughter was in a play. The Christmas Carol. It was kind of a Christmas Carol reference play, and I heard that line, so it's really her credit. But anyway, yes, I mean that we are our each other's business, and to live life like that will go much towards our mental and emotional health.
Do you think, just to be optimistic, that what we've been discussing has a cyclical kind of nature? The pendulum will swing back the other direction. We talked about how it used to be popular for men and women to get on bowling teams. Not only did they bowl, but they saw each other maybe once a week, or would go to the VFW or the American Legion, whatever it is. There was community there.
Yeah.
And that's been eroding. That's been your assertion to an epidemic of loneliness now, where we're just all separated from each other and there isn't much community. Maybe people will get tired of being lonely. Maybe people will get tired of living like that and find new ways to be part of a community.
Yeah.
Can that happen? And if it can, is there a way that those of us who are thinking about it can accelerate it?
It can happen, but it will have to, there's a price to pay. I mean, the reason why we're lonely is because we want power. That's the postmodern
dream. Total control.
Total control of my own life. And if I want an intimate relationship with Angela, that means I've got to let her have some say. So it's easier just to kind of keep her at arm's length. You know, we live in the same house.
A
lot less complicated.
You think.
But a lot more lonely. If I don't want to be lonely, if we want to return, if we want a world where community is a part of our lives, if we want a return to, a return we've always battled this since the Garden of Eden, we've always been fighting against each other. But if we want to return to a world where there's more community, it will have to take us collectively saying, I would rather have you than power to each other. I'm willing to give up power to you in order to be in your sphere and to be loved and known by you. And
you're talking about selflessness.
Yes. I don't know if we're ready for that, but the Christian church can be a model of that, of what it looks like to say, we don't like power. We don't need it. We don't want it. If we get it, we give it to each other, and we just want to be in community. We want to be the body of Christ. The church can be a model of that. All too often, the church is a model of selfishness and power grabbing, and we can be a model of what a world would look like where we love each other and are selfless.
So to wrap things up here, let's just imagine that somebody who is very lonely, desperately lonely, sad, depressed, and the holidays are here, and it's getting worse by the day. They Google something about their condition, and up pops Craving Answers, Craving God. They search the episodes there, and they find this one. And you get a chance to speak to that person one-on-one in this moment. What would you say to the struggling person listening to us now who says, you've been talking to me the whole time?
I would say you missed out on Thanksgiving dinner, but you want to come to Christmas? I would say that.
Yeah.
You know, come be with us. Come to our house. Come live life with us. And if you're too far away to do that, find somebody else that you can pull into your sphere. It might be, there might, you know, it's hard to walk around saying, who wants to like, let me into their life. You might have to say to somebody else, let's live life together. Let's do this together. Let's be friends and share our lives together and laugh and cry together and pray together.
And our listener says, I can't do that. I can't do it.
This is so common, Chuck. I talk to people who struggle with their faith all the time. I talk to people at every church I've been at, people, and I've only been at the church I'm at now about a year. Even there, though, it's already people who are struggling with mental health issues. And I'll say, you need to come to church. Here's a men's group that meets on Wednesday morning. Here's a men's group that meets on Saturday morning. Come and get involved. No, I don't want to do that. All right. Well, if you don't want to be with other people, you will be lonely. That's just the math. You are going to struggle with these sorts of issues unless you are sharing life with each other. And there's no getting around it. You can't be Mr. Tough Guy, I do it on my own, and be mentally healthy at the same time. It's impossible. That's your choice. You either lose power and you get love, or you gain power and you lose love. And it looks like that's the way it's going to work. And so the choice is up to you. You can come to my house for Christmas, or you can sit at home. But if you come to my house for Christmas, we'll have a lot of good food and we'll have good conversation and we won't be happy and jolly the whole time, but we will be together.
A wise person once said in a conversation as we were trying to find people who could work and serve in some kind of role in church, you always have to be prepared to ask twice. Oh, the first time you ask, it's usually not a definite, absolutely not. It's just a reluctance.
Yeah.
But if you'll take the time to ask again, be surprised how many people will say, okay, I'll give that a shot. Maybe we just need to be a little more persistent.
That's absolutely spot on. I'm glad that you mentioned that here at the end, because we do have a defense mechanism where part of my toughness as a postmodern individual is I don't accept help. And so if I sense that you're trying to do me a solid, I'll like say, okay, they're being nice. They're trying to like, I'll give them an out. No, thanks. I appreciate it, but maybe next time, but no thanks. But if you keep coming back, there's this sense that like, okay, this is important. This is important to them. And I think persistence is that's a great way to end this.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Craving Answers, Craving God. We hope you have found this discussion to be a blessing. Quoting the Apostle Paul, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that by the power of the Holy Spirit, you may abound in hope. For Pastor Aaron Miller and Production Manager Larry O'Leary, I'm Chuck Rathen.